listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week, we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We're your hosts, Sam Collier
and Sarah Cho. And today's topic, we revisit rejections.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun,
dun. We love him, we hate him, we have mixed feelings about him. But on this episode, we're gonna read some of our recent rejections that we've received over the last, what, year or two? And yeah, this is gonna be interesting.
Should we just start off by, I think we first talked about rejections like 2 years ago on this show.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if your feelings about rejections have changed at all as you've grown older and wiser?
I don't think so. I think I don't even remember what I said.
Me neither. How do you feel about rejections
in general? I mean, they are a good way to notify you if you got into something or not. I think maybe I still feel the same way. It's just like how the rejection is handled by both parties. I don't know. Like, could be revisited. But, you know, and I'll read some of my rejections. But the one that I feel that gets me going is the rejection when you know you're a finalist to something and then you get that no, absolute no. And I was sharing with you before we started recording just how I let myself dream and like convince myself like I got it, and then it's like a total letdown when you get that no.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, I think those have become my least favorite, to be honest.
It's also, I mean, I was just thinking about this now. When you are a finalist and then you're rejected, you can clearly see who you were up against. It's really different from being in the big pool where, like, you don't necessarily find out who the other applicants were. But when you're a finalist of a small group and then some of those people get chosen and you don't, it feels maybe more immediate what they were evaluating your work against.
Yeah. Totally.
I want to just kind of give an overview of all the different kind of rejections that I have received. Okay. So I think maybe twice in my life I have received something in the mail. And one of those opportunities was something I actually had to send a snail mail application. Like I had to print out 30 pages at my local FedEx or whatever and mail it in a big envelope, and then like received an envelope with a rejection letter in the mail. Actually, maybe this has happened a couple of times, but obviously it's becoming less frequent. And that's really interesting, especially when there's like a little handwritten note on the piece of, there's like a typed letter, you know, oh, so sorry, we received this many applications. We couldn't accept you. But then there's like a handwritten note like, try again next year. Or like, we really liked it. That feels like a really nice touch. It feels very personal. So that's one kind of rejection. Then there's the like standard email form letter. Dear playwright, you know, we received 500 applications. We regret that we couldn't choose yours. You know, keep writing.
Keep writing. Have a good day.
Have a good day. Then there is the one that's personalized. You know, it's an email, but it like they take the time to maybe write your name and the name of your play, which always feels like, I'm sure that takes a lot of extra work, but really it feels meaningful that they took the time to do that. Then there's the kind where they, and I find this particularly irritating. I can only think of one theater that has done this. I'm not going to name them, but they like in their rejection email, they said, you know, please come to our festival and tickets are available for like, I don't know, $500, whatever. And I was like, Maybe send two separate emails to say those two things. And then there's the kind where they just never inform you.
Mm-hmm.
Which maybe that's my least favorite. Where I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting, and they don't even bother to send a rejection. And then I'm like, well, I guess no news is bad news.
And then you just be like me, and then you go, kindly following up.
Yeah, so you follow up with an email.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, Sarah.
Okay, so I do follow up. I have the date. I record the date of when I sent the work out. I typically follow up on opportunities that are like ongoing submissions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no really like a fine print. If there's no fine print that they say after X number of months, if you don't hear back from us, you're not in, you know?
Right.
If there's nothing like that, then, you know, I do – after maybe within a year, after a good year, I do follow up and go, hi, my name's Sarah. My play is this. You know, I submitted on this date, kindly following up just to know what the status of is. And
yeah, that's, you know, so good.
And just like so curious. And they do – they typically respond back and within days, and just like, hey, thanks so much. Unfortunately, blah, blah, blah. And then the typical rejection. But, you know, sometimes you don't know if they just got lost. Like maybe their email to my rejection email was in the draft folder. They're just like, oh, forgot to send. You're like, you just don't know. But I do follow up, but it's not frequent. I think maybe I've done it like four times in the last 3 years. You know, it's not something
I do
frequently.
Well, and they also might just feel like – I'm sure sending a lot of rejections is kind of a bummer. And so they might feel like, well, if we're not going to do this person's play, why would they want to hear an email saying we're not going to do it?
Really? I think they enjoy it. I think they love it.
They like rejecting plays.
No, I just imagine that they're like, haha, I'm going to reject.
Okay, well, a good time. I have a piece of evidence that I think contradicts that allegation. I mean, of course, it's all just words, but I did receive a rejection last fall. I think it was last fall from a opportunity that said, in this year of all years, we wish only to say yes to our artistic community. But with X number of proposals, this was not possible. And I just thought that was, you know, thoughtful of them to say, like, we want to support everyone's work. We just don't have the ability to do that.
Mm.
Do you feel it would be more honest if they sent an email saying we love rejecting plays we don't like?
No. But that made me think that I was like, you know, well, actually, I'm trying to think this because I'm thinking like, you know what, I wouldn't mind knowing why I was rejected. But then at the same time, I was like, I don't want to get into that, open that up and being like, wait a minute. So are you saying that if I just cut down to four people and maybe like cut 10 pages and maybe that the scene that you thought it was a little crazy and a little too much, like maybe I just tone it down. Are you saying you'll accept it? Like, I don't want to start negotiating.
Right.
But yeah, I could see. I love that as a company, they want to produce all the work. They would, but they just don't have the funding maybe or the capabilities at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is a nice one. That's a nice opening to a rejection.
Well, and then they went on to say, we hope that the prompt enabled you to write something that excites you and that you'll continue to work on it. Which I think I had mixed feelings about. There's definitely a bratty part of me that's like, stop. Just, this is too much. You know, just like, just tell me I didn't get in and then that's enough. Mm-hmm. But there's another part of me that appreciates that they are trying to provide encouragement and support. And You know, now that I've been on the other side of reading applications a few times,
yeah,
I'm so aware of how much good work there is. And you just, you know, when you're told by an organization you can only accept one or two of these pieces, and you have dozens of pieces that are really, really good, I mean, you just have to say no to so much good work all the time. And I think that must be really, that must be difficult, you know, to say no over and over to work that you think is good. So I think I have a better understanding now than I did a couple of years ago of what goes into those rejections, what goes into the selection process. And a lot of times it's not really about the play as much as it is. I mean, it's not about the merits of the play or whether it's a good play as much as it is about kind of logistical things or wanting to balance themes, you know, or yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
But I do sometimes get annoyed when they're like trying to soften the blow.
It's like, okay, just pull it off like a quick band-aid and let's get moving on with our lives.
And also, like, there's that microscopic, minuscule, like, I don't know, fraction of a second where you get the email from the organization and you're like, oh, what's it gonna be? And you open the email and you're just like, your eyes are just scanning for the word like regret.
Regret, yeah.
Unfortunately. And you're like, I don't want to read through all this other stuff just to find out if I got in or not.
Yeah. Yeah. When the rejection starts with this year, I'm like, oh God, okay. All right. I got it. I got the message. I got it. Yeah. I'm walking away.
250
this year. I was like, okay. All right. Okay, so I'll read one of mine. So this one, it was like kind of I got notified through email, like a contact, being like, hey, yours being considered and is finalist. And then, so it was like a person, I think only because the submission was through email. And then it got like a response back through a person, like an actual person. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and saying that I was a finalist, I'm wait to be considered, just hang tight. I'm like on the edge of my seat. Literally almost every day I'm thinking about what's the outcome of this.
Yeah.
And then it was the email, not even like they said like, hi, Sarah. And then it goes, the first word is unfortunately. Like, okay, great. We're not offering you a spot. But it is personal, right? Because you're directly from a person. So it's like, let me just say, you know, your work resonated. Sincerely hope you consider playing next year. Like something about that, like you just said, that personal touch to it.
Yeah.
And she also explains a little bit of like, you got great pace, comedic timing, imaginative space is great. Like these are words I was like, oh, this is, thank you so much.
That means so much. So much. When they like identify something in your play that's working well.
Yeah.
It's like so generous.
So generous. And I'm like, and validating. I'm like, yes, thank you. Like those are some things I try to strive for. comedic timing, especially as a, you know, comedy writer. I'm like, oh my God, that like literally got to me. I was like, oh, like, that's all I ever really want to hear is those words, pace and comedic timing. It's like, oh, because it's the stuff that I'm like, I literally work hard every, like, try to do in everything I write is pace and comedic timing, especially for comedies, you know? And so just to read those words, it was enough for me to be like, okay, thank you so much. This is great. I'm going to apply again next year, you know?
Yeah, that's just so awesome because it makes you feel seen. Even though they can't give you a spot, they're still showing you how much they enjoy your work. And because I think so often when you receive a rejection, you're like, oh, it's, you know, the work is bad. And I don't mean you specifically. I mean, like, everyone feels that way.
Yeah.
And so when they take the time to identify something specific that's working and then say, we hope you'll apply next year, mm-hmm. that really, it feels meaningful.
Oh, all right. You're making me like this topic.
I remember reading a couple of years ago, this editor of a lit journal had posted about rejection letters. And she said, the worst thing ever is when we, you know, really like a poet's work, maybe their piece isn't right for this issue, and we say, you know, we would really love to read more of your stuff, but we don't have a spot for this one. Mm-hmm. And then you never hear from them again. And like, and she was saying, when we say we want to read more of your work, we mean it. We don't say that to everybody. Mm-hmm. We say it maybe to like 7 out of every 100 writers. And so when we don't hear from them again, it's such a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
And I really took that to heart, because up until that point, I thought that like, that's just, you know, kind of generic form letter language.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've come to get more and more rejection letters, I've learned that that's actually not common. That when a theater or a lit journal says, you know, something specific about your piece that they admire and that they hope you'll submit again next year, mm-hmm. that's special and you should listen to that.
Mm.
And you should send them more work.
Have you been keeping track of like noting yourself like, okay,
mm-hmm.
this place considered it, and even though they rejected yeah. me, they still, so you want to apply again next time?
I have a very low tech system, which is I think you would cringe if you saw this. It's a Word document.
Oh God.
It's just like a big hodgepodge of chronological dates and the place. So each submission entry is just a line of text starting with the date I submitted it, the theater, the name of the piece I submitted, and then any notes. And so like, it's, the text is black until I hear back from them. And then I either turn it green if I'm accepted, or blue if it's a finalist or semi-finalist, and then red if it's rejected. And if they leave me a note like, please send us more work, I always notate that. You know, sometimes they say, please submit something next year, or we want to read more of your stuff, or, you know, let us know about the future of this play. I always just put that in my really messy Word document. At some point I should probably turn it into an Excel sheet, but yeah. So because then I can quickly search the name of the institution or the play. I could see, oh, did I already send this play to this place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't think I've noted to myself the places that rejected me, but was obviously very, you know, eager for my work and stuff, that I was like, oh, because there's only a few of them, so I just remember, you know.
Yeah.
I should like note that. But I mean, your system totally works, because you could use a search and you could type in those keywords. That works. I'm not judging.
I can quickly see, like, if the text is still black, that means I haven't heard from them.
Right.
So I can tell what's active. But I do, you know, after a year of not hearing from something, I just turn it red and then I make a note, never notified, which is very irritating. But it does allow me, like, if I can see that, you know, I never heard back from someplace and it's a year, I'm going to start using your method and just following up with
it. Just following up. Yeah, just follow.
Kindly following up.
Yeah, kindly, bold, italicize. Kindly. Yeah. Okay. On the vein of sometimes we don't know the resources In my this one rejection letter, they say that. It says, like, we read many wonderful scripts this year, including yours, and deeply regret that due to our size and resources, we are forced to turn away many talented and worthy writers.
Yeah.
We truly appreciate your hard work and your interest in the conference and hope that you will submit your work to us again in the future. So, yeah. I mean, like, sometimes I'll just say it. They'll be like, yeah.
And I just, always used to read that and think, like, they're just being nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I knew that no theater could produce like 250 plays in their season. So they, or like 1,000 plays in their festival. I knew that. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed like language. Like, I just thought, well, obviously there are like a lot of bad plays and they just picked the good ones. And mine was one of the bad ones. Until I started reading submissions and I just realized that there's just so much good work out there. Mm. And also so much of it is subjective.
Yeah.
Sometimes your work just isn't right for a particular person or reader or theater. So I counted up. So my play Daisy Violet, I've had at this point 3 or 4 readings / workshops of it. And I counted up all the rejections I've had of that play just starting in 2018.
Wow.
I definitely had more since then. I mean, since before then. And I've had 29 rejections of this play and 3 acceptances.
Wow.
Since 2018. And I just think it's so important for people to know that rejection, it's just part of the game. And you can't take it personally because if I were to stop after 10, you know, or whatever, like that play would never have been done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think I've just in general, I'm not saying like one particular work had this number of rejections, but just going back to 2019, I have maybe a total of, looks like, what, 40 rejections?
Mm-hmm.
And then 2019, I had 1 finalist, 2020, 1 finalist, and then 2021, like, a proposal or whatever got accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like,
wow.
It's like the number is so interesting of how many I submitted and the work I submitted or, and the number of rejections ratio to a finalist or being accepted.
It's yeah. Like,
it's interesting to look at it that way, the data in that way. It's like, oh, wow, that's kind of crazy.
And I think it's so important to remember that sending out applications is in and of itself getting your work in front of people's eyes. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not accepted, they are still reading your play and becoming familiar with your work and your voice. Mm-hmm. And that is valuable on its own.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So in that same rejection letter that I just read, mm-hmm. The ending. So when I got this, I had no heads up about the play being a finalist. Like, I had no idea. Okay. There was no like, hey, just letting you know you're a finalist, you know? There was nothing like that. It was this email just came right at me. And so it was like, again, thank you for sharing your work with us and congratulations on being selected as a finalist in a very competitive year. We wish you and yours the best of health. And I was like, wait a minute. This was a finalist? You know, it was just like.
So would you prefer this since then you didn't get all your hopes up?
I guess so, because it's just like caught me off guard. And I mean, but the thing is, I think I remember texting you. I was like, did you submit it to this place? And did you get the same email? Like, is everyone a finalist? Because, that they're just saying this to everybody. Because I needed some sort of a confirmation. Like, is this really true? You know?
But it says your play made it to the final round. They're not going to say that to everybody.
I know, but I really thought that. Because I'm not going to say this name, but I just remember a few years ago when conference was like saying the same email to everybody that everybody was a semifinalist or something. And I was just like, oh, I just assumed like they're just saying this to everybody. And so, but yeah, so it really caught me off guard in that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there is something nice about just finding out at the end of the process that you were a finalist without being
prompted to
dragged through the ups and downs, the emotional roller coaster of getting your hopes up and then getting them dashed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There's something to be said for that. So what's your ideal rejection letter?
Ideal. My ideal rejection letter is that they accept me. I think I really like just the personal, like a little bit of personalizing and being like, what I mean, obviously they're not gonna do that for like 500 plays, you know, like here's why your play didn't get accepted, like here's what we loved about it, and like three buzzwords, you know. I mean, that's a lot.
So something personalized and specific.
Yeah. I mean, ideally. I think so. But I also understand that depending on the institution that they get, they receive a lot of work and they just can't – they don't have the capacity to personalize every email.
Right. Well, that's what makes it special. Because if every rejection letter were personalized, then it probably wouldn't feel special anymore.
Yeah.
I also don't like it when they're patronizing. Like, you know, don't tell me, you know, keep writing.
Like, yeah, I'm going to keep writing. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, do you think I'm 10 years old?
Keep on writing.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh.
Yeah, it is so funny to just see I don't know if it's funny or depressing, but just I have tracked since 2013 like every rejection and every places I submitted to, and it's like, y'all, it just takes so long. It's good. It's like, it's just, you're in it for the long haul. You have to be like mentally prepare yourself for that.
But then once you have that record of all those submissions, it does feel like you're like all the rejections are kind of accumulating into something of substance, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I've been doing this work for this many years, and
I'll say this, since 2013, my spreadsheet game has been ups and improved. My spreadsheet game is like on point. I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm really impressed with myself with all the color coding and
All right. I'll switch to a spreadsheet. You convinced me. I also think I really like it when they tell me the numbers. I find that very helpful.
Of like how many applicants?
Yeah, or like I got this one rejection for a residency I applied to, and I'm looking at 2019, and they told me I made it to a short list of 17 out of 253.
Wow. And yeah.
I was like, oh, that's super specific. Like, you told me how many applications there were, and you told me how long the short list was. And then they encouraged me to apply again. And that I felt that was very meaningful, you know, because you never know with a short list, oh, is that 5? You know, is that 30? So I like that detail.
Yeah.
And what about when they tell you the people who were accepted in the rejection letter? They're like,
do you hate that? What? Like, no.
I don't know. I just feel like I've occasionally gotten one where it's like, you know, dear applicant, we're so sorry we couldn't accept your play. Here are the chosen ones for the festival.
Oh, no.
Was that terrible?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I kind of like knowing rather than having to track it down on my own.
Couple things. I mean, just like from like organizational standpoint, like why would you blow that announcement or quit that soon? Knowing like as an organization, you probably want to like, you know, prep and like write that, you know, press release or something, you know, like why just like blow all your announcement that way? Like that.
It's always been like very small theaters. So maybe they were not thinking about it in that sophisticated way.
I guess. Like, okay. Yeah. But I see. I think I understand what you're saying or like how now I'm visualizing that letter. But oh, gosh. Because you know what I would do, right? It's just like now I see the names. I see the titles. I'm quickly Googling. And I'm like, maybe I wasn't up for the, you know, caliber or whatever. But yeah, I have such mixed feelings about that.
Or they're like, here's our email announcing the winners. And like, it's just kind of a mass email to everyone who applied, but it's not saying you're rejected. It's just like, here are the ones we picked.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Feels very impersonal, but like, I guess it's efficient.
It's like, okay, you're gloating. You're gloating.
It kind of reminds me of like in high school, you know, when they posted the list of the cast list or something.
Oh, yeah.
On the wall, and you just go and check and, oh, no, my name's not on there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm tree number two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you find out in this very public way.
Yeah.
There's like people crying in the hallway.
Were you the one consoling?
Probably. Oh my gosh. I'm sure. I was like, it's okay. You can try again next year. Tree number two is a really good part. There's no small parts. There's only small actors.
Oh no. Oh man.
All right.
Well, that's enough rejections.
Listeners, what is the best or worst rejection you ever received? Let us know.
Yep, let us know. And feel free to send like a screenshot, redact the name, and just because I want to read it. Okay, so glistens.
All right, my glisten is that the state of Ohio announced this week they will be awarding $1 million each to 5 randomly selected vaccinated people in their state, which I mean,
it's one way.
I have so many feelings about this. My first feeling was like, why is Maine not doing this? Because I could really, you know, get in the running for that.
When I heard this, I was like, what is going on over there? Is this like the Willy Wonka vaccine? Like,
I know. Golden ticket. That was my second thought, which was just like, this is ludicrous. People, like, it's just so American. Oh, you don't value your own life and the lives of your families, but you'll do it for $1 million.
Yeah. Who wants to be millionaire? it also, I was just like thinking, we know there are people dumb enough to do like multiple vaccines. They'll just like stab themselves. Like, give me 20 vaccines. I want the Johnson. I want the Moderna. I want
to increase their odds.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Come on. Like, let's be real.
But then there are people who will be turned off by it because they're like, look, the state of Ohio cannot buy me. You know, I will not sacrifice my bodily rights for any amount of money.
I don't know. I think if, you know, if you had the worst year of pandemic, you're broke, you lost everything, like, you'll be like, I will do this. I want this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just think like any opportunity, if there's any opportunity for a chance for free money, like, I think people will.
Yeah.
Do it. Well, you might be right.
I wonder if more states will do this.
We'll see. But did I tell you, I was like, Biden should start just paying people who've taken the vaccine. Another stimulus check, you know, and start incentivizing that way.
There's so many incentives, like states giving away free things. Like actually the state of Maine, if you get vaccinated, I got vaccinated too early, so I'm not eligible, but they're giving away like free hunting licenses and fishing licenses and like, state park entrance fees and all these things to people who get vaccinated now.
Mm. Oh, you know what California should do? Like what? Free rent or free house for like a year.
Oh, yeah.
like
free house for housing. A year. That's probably more than $1 million.
That'd be amazing. Okay. My glisten is square pizza pie, Sicilian style. So what's been kind of sad in my neighborhood is just like seeing shops close, you know, or like things like that. But at the same time, it's been crazy also to see new shops open that are kind of taking over. Like they were doing really well during the pandemic and then like opening shop. So this pizza place that is usually in, I think like West Hollywood, a little bit further out, opened up shop just literally a block from where I live. And I was like, oh my gosh, this pizza is so good. It used to be Pizza Hut, this place, and I guess it was new. And so we ordered the pizza last night. I'm sure I'm going to post it on the Instagram very soon. But oh my gosh, it was so good. The crust was so buttery. And we also ordered the meatballs. I mean –
What's different about Sicilian style pizza?
You know, I was wondering about that. I was like, what makes it? But it is a little spicy. It has like a little kick to it, the sauce. So I kind of wonder if that's what makes it Sicilian.
Does it have a very thin crust?
It's not too thin.
No.
No, it's kind of like almost the size of like a sheet pan.
It's rectangular.
Yeah, rectangular. So the box is rectangular. And so it's just as dense as maybe like a sheet pan. So it was really good. We're probably going to go there at least 3 more times.
Yum.
In the next month. It was really good. And it's also such a good if we have friends over anytime soon, like it's such a good like party food.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love it. Any Sicilians out there know what I'm talking about?
My great-grandparents were Sicilian.
Oh, really? Oh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So are you Italian? Part Italian?
My dad's mom's side of the family. My dad – so I spent some time with my dad's cousin this past week, and she was saying that when they were kids – the adults would all just sit around the table and talk for hours, and they'd be telling a funny story. And like, just when it got to the funny part, they'd just switch over from English to Italian, and like, then the kids never knew what the funny part of the story was.
Oh man!
Probably because it was inappropriate.
So funny.
The kids listening.
On Mother's Day, we went to see my mom and my grandma, and we like all sat down, ate dinner for like the first time in a year. And it was so nice. And Nick is there. And we speak like a mixture. We go Korean and English, kind of go back and forth and back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. And Nick, I remember after the dinner, we were on our way home. He was just like, I think it was the first time I kind of understood everything. Because it's like the English gave him a little context, or like, and then the Korean, how we're saying it, their reaction gave him a sense of like what we're talking about, or like how we're feeling about it. So it was just funny he said that, because he was the kind of like, I think I understood everything in that conversation, even though half of it was in Korean.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But that's what it reminded me of when he said that. But yeah. All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a wonderful day.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, Be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.becketsbabies.com. That's www.becketsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.